Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I am Justin, super fan of the victorious Seattle Seahawks and their big win over the Philadelphia Eagles. More on that later. Man, what a week it was. 11 PATs missed this week. Bad week for kicking in general. Kind of a bad year for kicking in general. A lot of really, really good games, though, including a Sunday night game that is not at all like we would have expected heading into week one. Before we get too far into things, though, let's make sure we talk about our sponsor, BetDSI. That's BetDSI.com. Use promo code FANUP10 to get $10 towards your first deposit. That's in addition to the 100% bonus you'll get. BetDSI is where you go to do all of your online gambling. They're safe, easy to use. They bet your winnings fast. You can bet on sports. You can bet on things like the NFL. You can bet on things like surfing. If you've been paying attention to us lately, we've talked a lot about surfing for some reason, especially Neil. You can also bet on things like politics. We're a couple years out from the next set of elections, but at least for now, you can start planning, scheming, getting your odds together. So that's BetDSI, promo code FANUP10 to get your free $10. And with that, let's get right to the recaps.
That's right, it's me, your Kansas City Chiefs superfan, fighting a little bit of a cold, but still ready to play here on the Next Fan Up podcast. We're going to be hitting all of the early games, and some of them I might be just talking to you solo, a little fireside chat. But first up, we have our Dallas superfan, Kevin, here to talk about their 27-17 win over the Baltimore Ravens at home. You know, it just seems like more and more, like just another, I guess it wasn't really a trip, not a business trip, but another day at the office, I suppose, for the Cowboys and for Dak Prescott especially, who finished the day 27 of 36 for 301 yards and 3 touchdowns. How are you feeling about this win, Kevin?
I'm feeling really good about the win today. We struggled in the first half. I mean, we didn't necessarily struggle, but we got off to a little bit of a slow start. The Ravens did a good job at bottling up Zeke in the first quarter. But really, the turning point in the game was the first possession the Cowboys had in the third quarter. I think we possessed the ball for about 7 or 8 minutes after the Ravens were only on the field to start the second half for, I think, 1 or 2 minutes. So we really wore out the Ravens defense in the third quarter, and that was the turning point in the game. Because until then, the first half, the Ravens defense was flying all around. We didn't really get much going until Cole Beasley's touchdown. I mean, it was 10-10 at halftime, so it was a pretty defensive game in the first half. So I think the third quarter and the fact that we had the ball 9-10 minutes out of the 15 minutes third quarter, I think that really tired out the Ravens defense, and that's ultimately what got us the win, because the fourth quarter we were able to find a little success around the ball, melt the clock, and secure the win with the last minute field goal by Dan Bailey to put us up 2 scores.
Yeah, and tell me about some of the other guys that have jumped up here. I mean, it seems like Dez has been catching on again after being quiet in some of these.
It's good. It's definitely great to see Dez have another good game. This is the first time this year he's put back-to-back games together that have been solid and what we expect from him. So that's definitely encouraging. That was probably the made me happiest today, seeing Dez have another good game. And of course, Dak. What more can we even say about Dak? Does he even make mistakes anymore? I don't even know. He seems invincible. So this right now, the Cowboys look to be the best team in the league. I'm watching the Patriots game right now. The 49ers are still with them. Obviously, the Patriots are going to win, but I think as of now, whatever this is, November 19th, November 20th. The Cowboys are the best team in the NFL, and that shows with their 9-1 record, the best record in the league. But one thing I just want to express that I did have concerns about was the Cowboys defense again. We were talking fantasy on Slack earlier this week, and I mentioned that Steve Smith could have a big game. And I said he was going to get double-digit catches, but he had 8 for almost 100 yards, 99 yards, and a touchdown. So that's something that continues to worry me, the way opposing teams are able to work the middle of the field against the Cowboys. Dennis Pitta had a few big grabs over the middle of the field. So that's something that's that we definitely need to pay attention for, look going into the future for Dallas. And we didn't really stop the run all that effectively. If Don Ravens was here, I would ask him why he thinks the Ravens went abandoned the run. I think they only had 15 rushes the whole game, but they were averaging a good chunk of yards every time they handed the ball off. So I'm curious to know his to see what he thinks why they abandoned the seemingly successful run play that kept the Dallas offense off the field and the Baltimore defense fresh. So that's something that is troublesome to me if I'm a Baltimore fan.
Yeah, as you mentioned, they technically had 16 carries, but that includes one by Joe Flacco on a scramble. But they were averaging 6.3 per carry.
Yeah,
on
exactly
the ground.
That's what I'm saying. In the first half, when the game was 10-10 close, they were running the ball pretty much at will. I think Terrence West at one point had back-to-back carries of like 18, 20 something, and then a 30-yard run. So like they were not even just being successful against us on the ground. They were gashing us at one point. So I'm not sure why they abandoned that, which obviously helped to our benefit. So we'll take it. But once again, the Cowboys' defense is always going to be an area of concern for me. I mean, on the pregame show, I said there's nothing that they could really do today that would quell my concerns, and I stand by that. Nothing that they did made me be like, okay, we're turning this around. Now they're still the same defense that I thought they were. If they're on the field for too long, they're going to get beat.
What else can you take from the Baltimore side? I mean, they fall to 5-5. Still alive in that division.
I think what really also hurt them today, besides them abandoning the run game, was they were highly penalized today. I mean, one of Dez Bryant's touchdowns came off like a 33-yard pass interference penalty, like one of the next few plays he had scored. And I think they had over 100 yards of penalties. So they really were starting to kick themselves in the foot in the second half. But moving forward, I think the Ravens, I mean, A.J. Green went down today with a torn hamstring, so that very much put the Bengals season finally to rest, moving to 3-7 now, is it? 3-7-1 or 3-6-1 with A.J. Green probably out a few weeks. So you have to think the Bengals are out of the running for that division. So at 5-5, it's Pittsburgh and Baltimore. Winner of that division be the 4 seed in the AFC, most likely. Four seed because Houston, but I don't really think this loss is that devastating for Baltimore. They could easily win the AFC North still. Again, it's just them and the Steelers in the running, but Cowboys are 9-1. Another good Sunday, 9 Sundays in a row. Dak Prescott has won 9 games, something Romo, Aikman. I don't think any Cowboys starter has ever won 9 games in a row. So I've been critical of Dak all year, so I'll give him credit there. He's an amazing, amazing quarterback. I don't know what I did. I don't know what Cowboys fans have done to deserve Dak, but sure enough, we got him, and we love him.
All right, good stuff. Well, congrats again on the win, and thanks for joining.
Thank you. Take care.
Cheers. We now toss it over to our Ravens superfan, Don, who confusingly is at a tailgate for the Redskins game. But Don, tell us what your thoughts were on this game.
Yeah, well, we were talking in our chat to Redskins superfan Neil. I can't pass up a $40 ticket, you know, and a ride to and from. So I figured, you know, tonight would be an interesting game to go to. You know, so I watched pretty much all the game today. Pretty disappointing effort, especially in the second half. I mean, I think the defense had things reasonably under control in the first half, but they just got gassed. They could only do so much. I believe the Cowboys scored on their last 6 drives. I mean, you know, holding penalties, offside penalties. I could say they beat themselves to some point. I mean, center Jeremy Zutaw had 3 penalties on him. You can't have that. But Yeah, they were looking good. I mean, obviously the running game was looking good in the first half, and it just went away. Not a loss that's going to knock us totally off track, but definitely a disappointing loss for the Ravens.
Yeah, that was what Kevin and I were talking about earlier, is both he and I were pretty surprised that Baltimore got away from the run, because it was being effective for you guys, like you said. Do you think that is a failure of play calling, or do you think, you know, they were sort of forced into that situation? What do you think about the way that this game was called?
I mean, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I don't really even know the answer. I mean, because earlier in the season, they would be very, very pass heavy, you know, and then they fired the offensive coordinator, Mark Trestman, and then you figured they'd go more run heavy, but then they just decided not to. I mean, you know, Flacco's on pace for 4,000 yards, which is great, but I mean, you gotta run the ball. I mean, they had Marshall Yanda playing at left guard for this game to help him. It's easier on his shoulder, and you know, the left side of the line especially was having some good success, and they just went away with it inexplicably. Not to say that they would have necessarily won had they kept running, but it would have been closer than, you know, 10-point loss.
Well, you guys fall to 5-5, but you're still very much alive in that division. How are you feeling about the Ravens' chances of turning this thing around?
I think it's with Cincinnati losing today, I think it's basically down to a two-horse race between Pittsburgh and Baltimore. I mean, we haven't faced Cincinnati yet. We face Cincinnati next week in Baltimore, and then week 17 at Cincinnati to close out the season. I mean, just the way the offense has been playing, you know, just I think Pittsburgh is going to end up winning it in the end, even though, you know, we have the tiebreaker right now. We play in Pittsburgh on Christmas Day, which will be a tough game, I think. Whoever wins this division is going to be the only team from the AFC North in the playoffs. You get too many strong teams in the AFC West. AFC South teams are right there as well. And you got Buffalo and Miami, you know, contending in the East. So the division winner might be 9-7, but they're going to be the only team in the playoffs. And just based on what I saw today, I think Pittsburgh is going to end up being that team. But, you know, if I'm wrong, I'd be pleasantly surprised. I'd love to have another division title.
Yeah, the Chiefs and the Broncos are also playing on Christmas Day, so that's going to be interesting. Possibly two divisions decided their destiny on the holiday. Should be fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, Don.
Not a problem, Nick. Glad to be here as always.
Cheers. Enjoy the tailgating.
Oh, I will.
Cool. We go now to the Buffalo Bills 16-12 win over the Cincinnati Bengals. I am here with our Bengals superfan, Scott. And Scott, this was a rough game for Andy Dalton, and one that that definitely would seem to hurt Cincinnati's chances of getting back into this playoff race. How are you feeling after this one?
Well, I think most Bengals fans are probably in the same boat as me. This was one of those games where, to save the season, they had to win. You know, the wild card is out of the picture, but the AFC North was still in the picture. You know, with Pittsburgh winning today and Baltimore losing, puts the leader at 5-5, and a win by the Bengals would have had them at 4-5-1, just half game back, with still two to play against Baltimore and one against Pittsburgh. But, you know, with the loss today, dropping to 3-6-1, you know, I don't see any way they climb back in this. And, you know, it's a team where, you know, could they get to 7-8 wins and possibly win the division? Maybe, but, you know, that would require stringing a couple wins together. And, you know, we just haven't seen anything from this team to say they're capable of stringing a couple wins together. You know, it was another frustrating loss. You know, certainly Dalton didn't have his best game. The stats don't really tell the story. His second interception was right in the hands of Tyler Eifert, and he basically threw it to a Bills player, and really cost the Bengals 3 points at the end of the half. And you know, there was a lot of drops by his receivers and backs, and just not a good game all around. Kind of what we've come to be used to with this 2016 version of the Bengals.
Well, and one guy that did stand out, though, is that your rookie Tyler Boyd had a pretty good game here with 6 receptions for 54 yards and a touchdown. You know, it's been sort of the talk this whole season is that, you know, Cincinnati lost a fair amount of pieces over this offseason. Do you feel like some of the young guys are stepping up enough for this team that you'll be back in the running next year?
Yes and no. I mean, it was you're right. Tyler Boyd had by far his best game of the year. And part of that was the fact that AJ Green was out. You know, Andy Dalton had to get the ball to some different weapons. But the last two games, really, Tyler Boyd has started to play a lot better and be a bigger part of the offense. You know, I think a lot of Bengals fans, myself included, thought that Boyd would actually contribute a lot more, a lot sooner this year. He had a really good preseason, looked very impressive, very polished, and you know, he just really didn't have a role in the offense until the last couple of weeks, and he started to play real well. So that was definitely, you know, his emergence in this game was I would say the highlight. As far as some of the other young players go, and you know, will they bounce back next year? I don't know. I think it really depends on the coaching staff. It's a coaching staff that's been around for the most part throughout Lewis's tenure, you know, 12, 13 years with the team, and the team just doesn't look like they're responding. I don't know if it's they need new pieces on the team, or if it's they have the pieces but they need a new message. You know, they have some other young players along the offensive line who are really struggling right now, players that were thought to be keys going forward, thought to be their tackles of the future, Cedric Obwehi and Jake Fisher, that really just aren't playing well. They have a couple other high-priced guards that are very disappointing this year. It was supposed to be one of their strengths this year, as it has been in the past, to the offensive line, and they just, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's scheme, whether it's, you know, continuity, they don't play well together. So I don't know. You know, what next year holds for this team, I'm not sure. Right now I'm not that confident, but I guess that would depend on who is the coach, if it's Lewis or someone else.
Well, that'll be something interesting to keep an eye on. Well, I do hope you guys end up with some dudes standing up, standing out, and I guess stepping up is the phrase I was looking for there. But anyways, thanks a lot for calling in, Scott.
Hey, absolutely, Nick. Good talking to you. Have a good one.
You too. We now move to the New York Giants and their 22-16 win over the Bears in New York. And I'm going to toss it to the victor here first. So, Sam, our Giants super fan, how are you feeling about this win?
You know, I'm actually feeling pretty good. A lot of the talk surrounding the Giants this week was our inability to run the ball, and they're actually pretty effective running the ball today. on defense, we started off the game a little flat, 16 points by the Bears, but they totally shut him down in the second half. And all in all, I think it was a good win. The offense still has, I would say, a substantial amount of work to do before the playoffs start, but sitting at 7-3, it seems like we're going to make it this year.
Good stuff. And Tom, you know, I know you haven't been super optimistic about this team. You now fall to 2-8. Any room for optimism here?
actually, there is. I'm actually going to give a reasonably positive report about this game. Probably most Bear fans won't appreciate that, but hear me out. I thought the Bears lost to a definitively better team today. Certainly a more talented team. They had a number of injuries going in. They incurred more. And the offensive line, you know, they were down to three backups. And I'm not going to say that's an excuse, but I mean, Jason Pierre-Paul pretty much dominated Mike Adams on the right at the right tackle spot. And I mean, just really shoved him back into Cutler the entire second half. And, you know, I thought that he and Charles Leno, who's actually the starter at left tackle, took turns giving up pressure on Cutler. But, you know, two backup guards and Adams, you know, they really didn't have any business even playing a good half of football against the Giants. And I thought they did. I thought the first half went reasonably well. The best thing about the Bears, it wasn't a great game. Leonard Floyd went down with a neck injury. We all hope he's okay. It was one of a few injuries that are going to hurt the team in the future. But the best thing about this game was that it was amazingly clean. I mean, I was really quite pleased with the fact that neither team turned the ball over until the final minute when Cutler threw what was really a desperation interception trying to make a play at the end of the second half. The penalties were really clean. The Bears had only, I think, 5 for 35 yards or something like that. The Giants had 4 for 35 yards. This is much, much better than the Bears have been playing, especially in that respect. You know, if you play a clean game like that and you don't turn the ball over, you're going to win a lot of games against teams that are just going to really just hand you the game by making mistakes and shooting themselves in the foot. The Giants played pretty well today. I thought Sam was right on the button. They happened to run up against a better team today who played pretty well and didn't hand up the game, and they lost. But, you know, that's not going to happen all year if they can play like this. And if you're a Bears fan, wins and losses, they don't mean that much right now. You know, it's really come down, as Tony Romo said, you know, if you can control the man inside of you, then the one across from you doesn't really matter. And for the Bears, it's all about making progress week to week. I thought I saw progress this week. I think if you can play clean and concentrate and not make mistakes, you'll win an awful lot of games that way. And this just wasn't one of the weeks when that was going to happen.
Well, and Sam, Tom here mentioned JPP a couple of times. He almost tripled his sack total for the year with his production in this game. Is he back, or was he just picking on some low-level competition?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think he's been getting a lot better as the season goes on. Having Olivier Vernon across from him, who also made a great play in the running game towards the end of the third quarter, and a big sack of Jay Cutler in the fourth quarter, he's facing more one-on-one matchups. And even with his, disability with that hand, if he's facing one-on-one, he'll win a bunch of the time. And when that happens, you see they bring pressure from both sides. They have Hankins and Harrison controlling the middle, and this is a line that is set to dominate for the rest of the season. So that's the best takeaway, is seeing how those guys play today.
Good stuff. And it was a bit of a quieter game for some of the other big stars on the offensive side of the ball, but are you concerned with that at all, or you just feel like this is just checking one more box on your way to hopefully playoffs?
You know, I don't think they took one shot deep with Odell Beckham, and I think they took one with every other receiver. And I just don't think that's smart. I think when you have Odell Beckham, who's really a generational talent, and you're throwing 4-yard outs on 2nd and 17 to Roger Lewis, you're really kind of not allowing yourself to excel. That being said, you know, they put up 22 points. I think they left a couple of points on the field. Rashad Jennings played better. But this was a trap game, and I thought the Bears came out and looked like they were going to take it a couple of times, especially there towards the end when they had that long pass to Wilson down the sideline. But, you know, Giants, you know, Robbie Gould missed 2 extra points, and that's something that in years past the Giants would have let come back and been the reason they lost. So I'm just happy that they were able to play defense the whole for all 60 minutes and really able to close out the game. We'll see what happens moving forward.
You know, in fairness, the Bears bracketed and double-covered Odell Beckham all game, and it opened up every other receiver on the field because I think that the Giants have more offensive talent than the Bears have talent at the defensive backfield right now. So, in truth, even though they didn't go to him deep, and, you know, they didn't do much with him, the truth of the matter was he was key to them winning the game. And he was a huge difference today, even though statistically it'll never show up.
All right. Well,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sam.
No, I'm just saying that's it's nice to hear from when the other team says that, you know, it wasn't really the Giants' fault. It was really they really made a concentrated effort to take away Odell Beckham. That makes more sense to me. I think he can beat double coverage a lot of times, and you have to at least go to him once or twice a game. But you know, a win's a win, and next week we have the Browns. So if we can avoid that and go 8-3, we'll be in the playoffs.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one.
Hey, you too.
We now move to the Pittsburgh Steelers' stunning, shocking incredibly surprising win over the Cleveland Browns, 24-9 in Cleveland. I'm here with Greg, our Steelers super fan, who's been down on his team for a while, but you know, nothing brings the spirit back like playing the Browns.
That's right. It was a game I actually got to attend thanks to free tickets from my boss. He gave me his season tickets to go see the game, since 35 degree weather with snow did not seem to entice him to go see an 0-10 football team. So it was a fun game to watch. I got to take my wife to her first NFL game, which she thoroughly enjoyed. So outside of that stuff, you know, thank goodness it was the Browns this week. The Steelers left a lot of plays on the field. You know, with the Steelers, you had Le'Veon Bell, like, you know, with the weather and everything, you know, not very complicated. They leaned on him. He had over 200 yards from scrimmage today. And the defense played better, despite the fact that they didn't have Cam Heyward. Stephon Tuitt, I think, stepped up with 2.5 sacks, and he was just a beast against the run. And it looks like some of the rookies on defense, Sean Davis and Artie Burns, our top two draft picks in the secondary there, they are both stepping up, getting real playing time against real receivers and doing well. The thing that's killing me about this team is, in the stat line today, it says that the Steelers have 0 turnovers. And I actually think that's incorrect. They actually had 3 turnovers in a sense. They, 3 different times, the Browns ended up with like 3rd and 20. And the Steelers bailed them out with a personal foul or illegal use of the hands to the face or a holding call that gave them an automatic first down. And those are the drives that the Browns actually went down the field and scored field goals. And it's those type of plays that get them, have caused losses against Dallas and other teams this year. So that's the one big concerning thing with the Steelers right now. The other major concerning thing, in my opinion, is there's no third guy on offense. Like, we don't have Martavis Bryant stepping up and helping us because he's suspended for smoking weed. They have, you know, Bell and AB and Ben, the trifecta there, the triplets. But they need that other option right now. And no one on the team, maybe because of injury or whatnot, is stepping up and doing it. So on a short week heading towards the Colts, I really don't know what to think about this team. They're 5-5, tied for the division lead. Thank goodness that the rest of the division sucks.
Well, my other worry with, you know, like leaning on the triplets so much is you have Le'Veon Bell, who had a great game. I mean, he ended up with 36 touches, 146 yards on the ground and a touchdown, 5.2 average, and another 55 yards in the receiving side. But against the Browns, do you really need to be putting 36 snaps of tread on Le'Veon Bell? They didn't even hand it off to anybody else.
Yes, and they don't have anyone else to hand it off to right now. I mean, D'Angelo Williams is out with a knee injury, and there's rumors that he might be heading to the IR, which might be a career ender for him. They're trying to starve that off if they, you know, can move the chess pieces around enough. But then they don't have any confidence in the other backs. They promoted Darrell Richardson this week to the active roster, and they have Trufant. Not Trufant. What's his name? Whatever the Michigan player is who lost his playoff game last year. But they don't have confidence in those guys, and Bell doesn't want to come off the field, so they're going to run Bell's tires off. It is a contract year for him. And you'd like to think that they could have got him out of the game, but the offense sputtered in the red zone because they didn't have that third option. It was obvious that the Browns were smart enough to double cover AB anytime it was a vital play. And Bell was, you know, accounted for very well with their secondary and everything. Even if they split him out wide or try to get him the ball out of the backfield. It's really that third option. That's where this Ladarius Green only starting the play now. Marcus Wheaton went to the IR. Eli Rogers has had flashes. Sammy Coates has had flashes. I mean, heck, in the red zone, I think the guy had 3 red zone targets. Is Kobe Hamilton. I honestly don't even know who that is. But he's playing wide receiver for us right now, and he's getting legitimate targets in crucial parts of the game. So.
And on the Browns side, I'll go ahead if you have anything more before we get to the most importantly is really talking about the Browns and how they finish out this season. Not really, but the just in terms of just looking at them as a 0-11 team, Of course, Terrell Pryor, you know, had his big plays of the game. But outside of that, man, I mean, they only rushed it 10 times that were not scrambles by their quarterbacks. I mean, just what it, you know, I guess, did you see anything out of the Browns that is like a piece that they have that's going to be useful for them moving forward?
It was really hard to get a sense of anything for the Browns because that offensive line, despite having Joe Thomas, is horrible. Cody Kessler today got knocked out of the game essentially because he ended up holding the ball too long because they didn't have to rush it. They could rush three and get pressure with that offensive line. They're just awful. That's why they couldn't run the ball. The Steelers are not a good run defense. And I think Crowell today had 8 rushes for 10 yards. And at one point, he was the leading rusher of the NFL this season. And the offensive line is just that bad.
They also gave up 8 sacks, 4 to each of their 2 quarterbacks. So at least they're not playing favorites, I suppose. But yeah, it continues to be bleak for the Cleveland Browns. Now that you're back at 5-5, it's going to be an interesting division now. I've been talking to all the other AFC North guys. Looks like it's back down to the Baltimore and Pittsburgh to finish the season out. How are you feeling about the final stretch of your schedule?
I feel really good. I mean, thank goodness we have the Browns again. We have the other 2 teams in our division again. And we have favorable matchups. I feel like winning 4 more games, getting to 9 wins, is something that Baltimore won't be able to do. Because unfortunately, Baltimore has a very difficult end of their season. So, not because the Steelers deserve to win a division, but you know, they have the easy part of their schedule heading into, you know, December. And unfortunately, the Ravens have to go to like New England and things like that. So I think it's just the last survivor, not that they earned the division.
All right. Cool stuff. Well, thanks a lot for calling in. I'll be talking to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Dick.
Cheers. We now move on to the Jacksonville Jaguars and their 19-26 loss in Detroit to the Lions. And I am joined once again by our Jaguars superfan, Ryan. And Ryan, I just feel like this was just another quintessential Jaguars game. And it was like Blake Bortles' stat line of 22 of 35 for 202 yards, 5 touchdowns, or 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. It was just like the most Blake Bortles-y stat line ever. Seems like sort of the same story, but you tell me.
Hey,
what happened in this one?
You nailed it. You know, just couldn't be doing better. You know, here we go again. That's what I was going to say to you is 3 weeks in a row now. We've got basically the same thing. We got a 5-point loss to the Chiefs, 3-point loss to the Texans. Now a 7, really a 4-point loss to the Lions, but really 4 and then kind of a garbage time field goal and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if I were to ask you, and you probably looked at the game breakdown, just Nick, you know, we've been talking the last few weeks. I don't know if our convos are the conversations are the most memorable, but what would you guess, just guess something that would happen in this game?
Oh, well, I imagine you guys had some shots to pull this one back out in the fourth quarter and pretty much failed on your own volition. But I haven't watched the highlights, so I don't know that to be true.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, hey, that's a pretty good guess. The other thing that I was expecting you to say possibly is ask me if Bortles threw a pick 6, because yes, he did. Yes, sir. And he actually looked, you know, besides his awful interceptions, he looked pretty good again. But it's a really strange-looking pick 6 also. I don't even know if that's a highlight anywhere, but it just is weird-looking. And, yeah, it's all it is the same thing over again. And there's 2, here's the only interesting things that anyone needs to know. Oh, and by the way, obviously the Lions won, but they had like less than 15 rushing yards or something, and no team has won with that in 3 years. And the last team to do it was a team against the Jaguars. So great. So, you know, we're really consistent over this whole Gus Bradley era. Here's the two interesting things, although we'll call that three. That was also interesting. One is Marquise Lee looked good again. And I'm so confused by the wide receiver situation now because I'll say again, Allen Robinson should be a top 10 receiver in the NFL. And he just hasn't been this year. He's got some touchdowns again, but he just – watching him, it's not the same as last year. I thought he was going to take a step up. He's good, but who knows? Alan Hearns has just dropped off. I don't know if it's a concussion or what, but he was just the definition of consistency. And I don't know what's going on with him. Bortles isn't even looking his way much. But Marquise Lee looks great. Again, just making plays and happy for him because he started out with injuries and plenty of Jaguars fans wanted him cut, by the way, just after 2 years. Just get rid of him, man. He's injured, you know, let's get rid of him. So the final thing is after the game, or really on, like, the last couple plays, they cut away to Jalen Ramsey on the sideline, and he was literally crying, just crying. And I'm not here to make fun of anybody. I don't care. I don't know what it is, if he was, like, just tired of losing because he's not used to it and it's really hitting him hard, or like when I saw it, we'll see what happens, but it looked to me like, I don't know, did he know Gus Bradley was going to get fired if they lost this game or something? He was just he was crying, and it was strange, and you know, he'll cry for all the Jaguars fans out there because I think right now we're all pretty apathetic.
Yeah, that is strange. Another thing that's strange, I mean, you mentioned it. Allen Hearns had one reception for 9 yards. Allen Robinson had 3 for 18 and a touchdown, but still, it's 3 for 18. But Chris Ivory was a leading receiver with 6 receptions for 75 yards. Was that just because the Lions were playing well deep and they were just taking advantage of the short passes? Or do you think this is some sort of a strategy to keep Bortles from throwing so many picks? To start throwing it short a bit more? I mean, he averaged 5.8 yards per attempt.
You know, I'm glad you asked. Let's talk football stuff. You know, I guess Jaguars are technically a team, so I give Bortles a lot of credit for this. And Ivory, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it. Ivory played great. Bortles, for the first time in a while, kind of like smartly used checkdowns. And the Lions, you know, maybe they're recovering well, but unlike last year, the Jags just hadn't been able to throw the ball downfield that well all year. But Bortles would look, it wasn't there, and he'd throw to Ivory, and Ivory would either be just completely wide open or he would make a move and get downfield. And it was really, really working for a long time. And coincidentally, by the way, the Lions got the ball back up 4 with 8:19 left and ran the clock all the way down, essentially. And coincidentally, they did the same thing to us using Theo Riddick, who's a much better pass receiver, even though Ivory played great. But they just started throwing the dump offs to Riddick, and they would just convert every third down, and he kind of iced the game. But yeah, kudos to Ivory. He looked good today. Love that guy. Good for him.
And what do you take from this if you're a Lions fan? I mean, you already mentioned the weirdest part of their side, which is that they rushed 21 times for 14 yards. But Eric Ebron looked great. You know, you had some guys standing out over there. Do you think they have some real legs to their season?
No. In a word, no. I mean, they not just the run game, but early on, they weren't doing anything on offense. They had a punt return touchdown in this game and a weird-looking pick six in this game. And honestly, you know, you're playing my beloved team, and it's not really that impressive because this game was close, and Jags went up 19-16. I don't remember how much time was left. Oh, and similar to last week in the Houston game, there's a crazy third down play that the Lions, I don't want to say lucky to convert, but it was very close. Just by a hair, the Jags missed a sack fumble of Stafford, and instead he threw it. That might have been like a 60-yard play or so. I don't know. they got something on a third down, and that gave them the go-ahead touchdown, I'm pretty sure. And anyway, yeah, so the Lions didn't look that great. Credit to them for winning and being in first place, but I wouldn't have any faith in them to do anything in the playoffs.
All right, well, Ryan, it's always a pleasure. I don't know if it's fun for you to be talking about the Jaguars and these conversations, but I certainly enjoy it, and I look forward to talking to you next week.
Oh, yeah, pleasure. Always pleasure talking to you, Nick. You know, maybe a couple more times for the season, maybe we'll have a win.
Hey, maybe.
Two more times. Here we go.
All right, well, and good luck in getting those two more.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
All right, cheers. We now move on to the Indianapolis Colts and their 24-17 win over the Titans in Indianapolis. I'm here with our Colts super fan, Dan. And so, Dan, you know, this was a game that, I mean, Indianapolis was very impressive to start this one out. I mean, I think you guys have had some fits and starts, but, I mean, how happy are you with the way they came out here?
Yeah, they came out. It looked like even from the first play of the game on the kickoff, they were fired up, ready to go. I think it was Antonio Morrison, takes on a block, makes the tackle, and kind of sets the tone for how the game was going to go for Indianapolis. They got out quick to a 21-0 lead. They even went for it. I think it was a 4th-and-1. A lot of times, Pagano would have settled for the field goal, but with the importance of the game, I think he decided to go ahead and go for it. They got that and scored a touchdown. So getting up to 21-0 early was huge, and it looked like Luck was on target with Moncrief. First score of the game was a throw to his way. And then he hit T.Y. for another score. So he was ready to go. They ran a couple wildcat plays for a little trickery. Both of those plays, I think, were successful in their own regard. And the defense somehow even looked good. It looked like they had some coverage downfield, or at least Mariota was uncomfortable enough to not throw the ball. I don't know how good the coverage really was, but that allowed to get them some pass rush and got a couple sacks on the day. And really, overall, it was a pretty good game. Gave up a couple of scores that you'd like them to not, but, you know, with a defense that's as bad as Indy's is, it was nice to see them make some plays in a positive way.
Yeah, and I think on the Titans side, I think a lot of people were very impressed with Mariota and the team as a whole last week. But I think, if anything, I mean, this Colts loss, you know, it may show that if you can really fairly effectively stuff the Tennessee running game, or at least like limit their productivity there, that Mariota, you know, it seems like he leans on that quite a bit.
Yeah, he definitely does. And going back to the offseason, you could tell that was the style of team they wanted to build. But like you said, they managed to keep DeMarco Murray under wraps, and 4th-and-1, they give the ball to Murray and they don't get it. So, you know, for the last 5 years, I don't think we'd ever be able to say that and mean it, but they did it today against a good running football team, and I think a lot of people were surprised by it.
And nonetheless, the Colts were still not able to run very effectively, you know, on their side. How confident are you that that this shows some improvement in some of these key areas where Indianapolis has been falling short?
Well, I think getting healthy is a big step. So offensively, I think that their passing game is going to open some things up for it. They had a pretty good throwing day from Andrew Luck, pretty good receiving day, except for Dwayne Allen. For whatever reason, he's just not getting going this year. But like you said, the running games continues to be a struggle. But defense, you know, there's a glimmer of hope there. The Titans have been on fire on offense lately, and the Colts get a bye, an extra week to prepare for it. But to come out and hold a team that's been on fire, averaging over 30 points a game, holding them down to 17, I think that gives you a little bit of hope. And, you know, Robert Mathis had a little bit of youth movement. So is that the bye week? Probably. But if not, look for him to get things going for the Colts defensively. And then the Texans have a huge game on Monday night. If the Texans lose that game, the Colts are only a game out of first place. So we might see a shift here in the AFC South here to finish out the season.
Yeah. No, it's definitely one where the Colts are very much alive in this thing. Anybody else who stood out? I mean, like, it seems like, I was just sort of dissing your run game, but, you know, Gore was great in the passing game. How do you feel like, are they changing things up at all on offense? Is there anything new they're doing in the passing game that they weren't really attempting before?
the big play for Gore in the passing game, they lined up in the Wildcat. It was a direct snap to Gore, and he gave a kind of a pass back to Andrew Luck. And the only receiver that they sent out on the play was T.Y. Hilton, and he was double covered. But Tennessee just forgot about Frank in the backfield after that play. So he stayed in the block, didn't have anyone to hit. And by the time that the pass rush got to Luck, Gore had snuck out into the flats wide open and just ran down the field. So Frank's always been one of those guys that's really good at chipping in and pass blocking. But if he can continue to not get engaged by defenders, I think he'll be a great addition to the passing part of the offense. But defensively, one of the players that stood out was Edwin Jackson. He was a middle linebacker. I can't remember if he was undrafted or just a late draft pick. But he made a couple of big plays out in open space where his speed it was the highlight of the play. He was able to track down Mariota on a scramble that stopped him from getting a first down. And I didn't know he was that fast. It was pretty impressive speed he displayed out there. So if he can start making some plays with that speed and making smart football plays, he might be a bright spot for the Colts defense going forward. Maybe he can cover the tight ends that they've struggled to cover for so long.
Great. Well, good stuff. Congrats again on the win, and thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thank you. We might be talking next week with first place on the line.
That's true. All right, well, have a good one.
All right, thanks.
Well, we can't avoid it any longer. It's time to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs, my team, and their 17-19 loss against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You know, I've been sort of saying this last couple of weeks that, on one hand, the Chiefs' formula of essentially doing very little and just waiting for the other team to screw up has been, you know, it's not a fluky thing. It's something that they can repeat and that they've just continued to do game in and game out. But eventually, the offense still has to do something on the field. And I just figured that one of these games was going to come back to bite them against a team that they should beat. They're not always going to have their playmakers to bail them out, particularly in this game where cornerback Marcus Peters was out for the entire game. Dee Ford, who is tied for the league lead in sacks, he went down early in this game. And so you have the league interception leader and the league sack leader both suddenly no longer on your team. Justin Houston made his return in this, but was very quiet. He's clearly not 100%. Hopefully that's more rust issue than you know, any type of lingering injury. But I think for most Kansas City Chiefs fans, the big story here is Alex Smith. This has not been his first bad game this season. Smith has actually had some legitimately good games this season. But this was about as bad as he's been as a Chief. Not only missing on some open receivers, just absolutely sailing the ball on some guys, but his red zone interception was both really bad and actually really non-Alex Smith-like. I think the way that the Chiefs have been building this team is, and there's a lot of Alex Smith detractors, but the biggest thing is that, you know, you can win with Alex Smith because if what you do as a team is if you are the best at turnover differential, or if you're the best at, you know, it's just like if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers and you're the best passing offense, or if you are, you know, the best pass rushing team, you can build a team around that. The Chiefs have taken a little bit of a step back on some of those things, but the biggest thing is that they win the turnover battle every single time. And you can build a winning formula around that every single time, as long as you have a quarterback who does not make that mistake. You know, his interception against the Panthers I was okay with because it was at like a 3rd and 10 at midfield where they were probably going to end up punting. And if the only option available is the deep guy and you take a shot in a way that if it's intercepted, it's essentially the same result as a punt, I'm always okay with that pass. This one was not that. This was a really poor decision, throwing into double coverage on the goal line in a possession that the Chiefs desperately needed a score on. And that was sort of the story of this game. The Chiefs defense, despite the missing a couple of their big playmakers, they really did a very good job of bending but not breaking. They held tough on all of the Buccaneers' red zone trips, and it just wasn't enough for the Chiefs. If they're holding on and waiting for their defense to make some huge play every game, they're just not going to be able to win consistently that way. I mean, I had been sort of defending that as being a just a Chiefsian thing to do, but it's clear now that unless Alex Smith gets a little bit better, this is going to be a real problem and something that might sort of stunt their ambitions a bit when it comes to the postseason here. I will say that, like I said, some of these throws have been so unlike Smith that I do think it's very likely that he is still suffering from the effects of those two supposedly not concussions in the Indianapolis game, because we have not seen him make some of those sort of throws really at all. So that's something to keep watching. Obviously, you know, Travis Kelce continued to be great. He went 7 receptions for 108 yards. He had one drop, but he can be forgiven for that. It was also one of the most bizarre play calls in a long line of strange Andy Reid play calls, where there was a play where Kelce went up gimpy. He was limping really heavily. I think he rolled his ankle or something as he came down on a catch. So he comes limping, you know, barely dragging himself off the field. A couple plays pass. He seemed to, I guess he shook it off on the field. He goes back in, and on the goal line, they call a jet sweep handoff to him running around in the backfield, which, first of all, I rarely like those plays to begin with. I have a longstanding policy of hating end arounds, but even jet sweeps. But a jet sweep to a tight end who's not fast enough to make the corner anyway, and a injured tight end, it just makes zero sense to me to hand off the ball to a tight end right after he came up gimpy on a previous play. It makes zero sense. Of course, it was a 5-yard loss. But all in all, this is a game where hopefully it doesn't cost the Chiefs moving down in the season. If they can get their offense sorted out, this is not going to be a huge issue. But if they fall one game short of getting the number 2 seed, or even, hey, maybe the number 1 seed if New England drops one or two later this season, they're going to be looking at this game as the reason why. And I can only hope that they can sort out some of these issues before heading to face a Denver team that is coming off the bye and in a really critical game. On Tampa Bay's side, I haven't talked nearly enough about them. They are an impressive team. Their defense, despite the fact that a lot of these issues were just the Chiefs tripping over themselves, the defense played tough, stifled the running game quite well. And I think this is still a team with a lot of promise. They're 5-5. They're definitely alive in their division race. And Jameis Winston just continues to impress. He went 24 of 39 for 331 yards and a touchdown. And he just has it. I mean, he passes the eye test. He makes good decisions. And obviously it doesn't hurt if you have Mike Evans to throw to. Mike Evans went 6 receptions for 105 yards. And although the Chiefs were able to stifle Doug Martin most of the time, he ended up with just 24 yards for 63 carries. But a lot of that was him getting stuck deep behind the line on some broken plays. But he also had a ton of plays where he got 6, 7, 8-yard gains that were able to set up easy, move-the-chains sort of plays that followed. And that was what killed the Chiefs most of all in this game, was the Buccaneers' ability to continue to move the ball, have very long drives. And in the same way that you try to, you deal with a team that really can score quickly by just keeping them off the field, I think it's actually been the tactic that's been employed by the Panthers, slightly unsuccessfully, obviously, and now the Buccaneers successfully against the Chiefs, which is, if you're playing against a team that really doesn't necessarily score on every drive, that doesn't score quickly, and that needs a lot of drives and a lot of long drives to really produce points, then you do the same thing to them. You keep them off the field. And if you can keep this Chiefs offense off the field and limit their possessions, they're just not going to produce enough. And that is something the Chiefs need to work on. So you'll be hearing, hopefully, a happier Chiefs fan next week. And next up is the Arizona Cardinals and their 24-30 loss in Minneapolis, or not in, well, actually it is in Minneapolis, either way, against the Vikings. And I'm here with our Cardinals super fan, Dr. Jones. And Doctor, you guys fall to 4-5-1. It was another up and down game from Carson Palmer. How do you make sense of the way things are going for the Cardinals right now?
You know, it's the same recipe week over week. Horrible special teams, horrible interceptions at the wrong time, players not where they're supposed to be, blaming the officials for penalties not called. But in reality, what this is a team that's not looking internally, seeing that they have a horrible special teams coach that they need to replace. Bruce Arians, after the game during his press conference, said, "Do you feel the special teams positions being coached adequately?" And he says, "Absolutely, absolutely." Meanwhile, on the field, what we see is you open the second half with a 104-yard kickoff return for a touchdown. The Vikings are punting to us, and we are trying to go up by 1 point, scoring a touchdown with 2 minutes left in the game, and our kickoff returner's letting the ball hit the ground and bounce another 20 yards downfield, setting up the longest punt in that punter's history. So what you see week over week is the same thing, a very undisciplined team not receiving the coaching in some of the areas that are costing us at very critical times. I think this is the second or third game we've lost this year due to very poor special teams play. And being 6-3 would be much better than being 4-5-1 like we are right now. So it drives me crazy. I see it week over week. I see it month over month now. Plus, it hurts even more because my entire family is a bunch of Vikings fans. So my Facebook avatar is now a Vikings logo. I'm not even allowed to go an entire week without being just completely pissed off at a team that was in the NFC title game last year, but this year can't even get out of its own way. I don't know how you feel, but if you can't tell, I'm a little down. This game might have cost us the playoffs this week.
Yeah, well, the one bright spot for you guys continues to be David Johnson. He ended up with 160 yards from scrimmage and a couple of touchdowns. He seems like the kind of guy that you can continue to build an offense onto. The question is if you don't make the playoffs this year, sort of, you know, what are sort of the pieces you're going to be wanting there next year? I mean, is this the end of Carson Palmer? What do you think about some of these veterans you have on that side?
I actually said it to a friend just a little while ago. I think Carson Palmer's turning into end of retirement Peyton Manning. The only thing that we're missing is the wobble on those ducks he's throwing downfield. It's really horrible to watch. It's hard to watch. And as you said, David Johnson, he continues to be the bright spot for us. The only thing that's driving me a little bit mad is 29 touches, 160 total yards, 2 touchdowns. Are we using him too much? Obviously, we need him to win these games, but 29 touches. I know he had a huge touch count against Seattle earlier this year. I'm really getting scared that this is something that could stunt his production going forward just because of how much we have to use him this year because of how horrible our team is playing. It's just something that has to be monitored going forward. Is it worth giving this guy 25 to 30 touches a game when we're probably going to end up the 7th or 8th seed in the NFC, not make the playoffs? It's going to be a rebuilding offseason. Carson Palmer, we're going to have to take a deep look internally to see if this is the guy we want moving forward. Drew Stanton is not the answer at backup quarterback. We really don't have a long-term solution there. Our number 2 cornerback is definitely playing very poorly, whoever we decide for that to be game to game. It started with our 2nd-round draft pick. It moved on to Marcus Cooper, someone we picked up from the Chiefs, and then it has now moved back to Justin Bethel, who gave up the first touchdown today. It's just continuous problems at the number 2 corner position, continuous problems on special teams are leading to very horrible results. I mean, a 100-yard interception return for a touchdown and a 100-yard kickoff return for a touchdown, and you lose a game by 6 points. Nothing more is going to make me drive crazy. Is going to drive me crazy than that undisciplined play. So, I think the Cardinals need to stop making excuses in their press conferences, and I think they need to start looking internally and try and answer these hard questions and have very honest conversations in these leadership offices. And I just don't think it's happening right now as everyone makes excuses outward.
And if you're a Vikings fan, you know, at least they snapped their, I believe, 4-game losing streak, albeit in a close one at home, but they still weren't able to really get anything going on the ground. I mean, what did you see from them, and what would you be encouraged or discouraged by if you're a Vikings fan?
Well, I think they should be encouraged by their defense and their special teams. So Michael Kendricks, I think he'd missed the last couple games. He came back and he made some pretty good tackles on third down to stop some drives. We had some great quarterback pressure. That could be attributable to the fact that the Arizona Cardinals offensive line is a walking abomination in the NFL. But they had a, I don't remember what his name was, but they have a very young guy who was making a couple sacks. And I think they should be impressed with some of the defensive line play. They definitely need some help on their running backs and their offensive line. Sam Bradford's not going to win them any trophies, but they're going to be competent. And, of course, there's no better elixir to a four-game losing streak than the Arizona Cardinals coming to town. So I would probably say the linebacker that came back from injury and then the guy that was getting the sacks. I don't remember who it was, but I think he had two or three in the game.
Looks like it was Danielle Hunter.
That is right, yes.
Oh. Great. Well, thanks a lot. Better luck next week. And, you know, you guys still have meaningful games left. It's not over yet, but it's definitely gotten harder.
That's right. That's right. There's nowhere to go from but up from here. That's the hope. Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, no problem.
We now move to the Miami Dolphins and their 14-10 win over the Los Angeles Rams in Los Angeles. I'm here with our Dolphins super fan, Andy. And Andy, I saw a crazy tweet, which I just lost, but it basically was by, I think, ESPN or the NFL, just describing the Dolphins' drives in this game, which were like punt, 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 interception, punt, 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 TD, TD, win. So it appears it was an interesting game.
So shameless plug coming up, but I was actually watching the game, and I watched many Dolphins games at Slattery's NYC, which is the official Miami Dolphins fan bar of New York City. And I was talking to everyone. Everyone knows me there as, you know, the negative Nancy, not because I'm negative, but because I'm realistic about the Dolphins. And I was taught after Tannehill threw his second and game-winning touchdown pass to Devontae Parker, who we can talk about a little bit later, I was telling everyone, you know, it's about time that Tannehill had a Joe Flacco game. What do I mean by Joe Flacco game? I mean a game where he just looks absolutely miserable for the first 54 minutes, but in the final 6 minutes puts together a couple of drives, wins the game, and everyone puts the game on his shoulders and thinks he's so great. Fact of the matter is the Dolphins probably didn't deserve to win this game. It was the type of game that really the type of game that only a mother could love. And by a mother, I mean a fan of one of these two teams. When people talk about the NFL product being bad and the games are boring and, you know, it's games like this that they point to. I mean, this was basically a 10-0 Rams lead for the majority of the second half. We just scored two touchdowns in the final, you know, 7.5 minutes, completely took the game from under them. Amazing, amazing victory. And really, more than, you know, I'm not going to praise Tannehill or the decimated offensive line or Ajayi or Parker. They all played well when it mettered. But, I mean, this game really shows the mettle more than anything of Adam Gase. And, you know, Philbin doesn't win this game. Philbin goes down 10-0 and loses 17-3. Gase goes down 10-0 and wins 14-10. And I'm buying in, bro. I'm buying in.
Well, that's good to hear. And it looks like, you know, Jay Ajayi continued to be good. And Devontae Parker, you wanted to get back to him. He was your leading receiver with 8 receptions for 79 yards and a touchdown. You know, what can you say about these young guys that are stepping up?
Yeah, I mean, the Dolphins' 2015 draft is quietly shaping up to be a pretty good one. Probably the best one we've had since 2012, which is when we took Tannehill, Lamar Miller, Olivier Vernon, and Rishard Matthews. You know, the 2015 draft, you have Devontae Parker in the first round. He played really well today, played even better last week against the Chargers. Jay Ajayi, fifth-round pick, we all know who he is at this point. If you play fantasy football, you definitely know who he is. And Jordan Phillips, our second-round pick, playing right next to Sue, he had 3 tackles for loss. Shaping up to be a pretty good draft. And with regards to Parker specifically, you know, if you recall what I told you about Devontae Parker after the Titans game, which at this point was 6 weeks ago, I said, you know, as football fans with first-round picks, we tend to view them in an unfairly binary fashion. You're either a franchise player or a bust, franchise player or a bust. There's no in between. And the bottom line with Devontae Parker is that he may never be that AJ Green type, but he's like, he's a better version of Michael Crabtree, if that makes sense. I mean, he is really a very, very good NFL receiver. And the thing with him is just going to be health more than anything else. When he's on the field and he's 80% or more, he's going to be an impactful player like he was against San Diego, like he was today. It's just a matter of keeping his hamstrings healthy and you know, keeping him out there. And one thing that I do want to mention as well is that the Dolphins came into this game without their starting left tackle, Brandon Albert, without their starting center, Mike Pouncey. They lost Laremy Tunsil. Laremy Tunsil, who's normally a left guard, he switched over to left tackle. He played only 30% of this game. He was gone midway through the second quarter. Tannehill was basically playing with a replacement-level offensive line, and against the Rams defense, you know, they made him look bad for most of it. But those final two drives, I'm not sure what we changed schematically. I'm going to have to go back and look at the film, which I'll probably do within the next hour once I get home. But I'm not sure what we changed schematically, but he had more time. And, you know, Kenny Stills is a guy who I think it means more to this offense than his numbers would suggest just because of his deep speed. And on the game-winning touchdown pass, if you actually watch the replay, you'll see Stills kind of clear out, bring defenders with him on a post route. Devontae Parker sits underneath him and catches that pass in the corner of the end zone.
And on the Rams side, you know, this was Jared Goff's game here, and he did not look all that impressive. In fact, I mean, on offense, they didn't look great in general. Even Todd Gurley had just an iffy game. But, you know, give us a scouting report on Goff.
It's really hard to be honest, just because it was, you could tell they implemented such an incredibly idiot-proof game plan for him. It reminds me of week 17, 2013, when Rex Ryan basically told Geno Smith, and the Jets beat us this game, by the way, Rex Ryan basically told Geno Smith, okay, we don't want you throwing the ball more than 10 yards downfield because we simply don't trust you. That's basically what the game plan was with Jared Goff. I mean, he had, you know, he had a couple nice gains through the air, but his biggest gain, I believe, was a little five-yard stick route to Tavon Austin where Tony Lippett missed the tackle and it went for 25 yards. A lot of run after the catch. In terms of plays that he made downfield, he really didn't make any. I mean, his final numbers, I don't have them in front of me, but I would imagine they were something to the effect of, you know, 14 of 27 for maybe 120 yards, you know, literally 4.5 yards per pass attempt, really not doing much. It's tough for me to give you a scouting report on him because I saw so little of him. I will say that there was one play that sticks out to me. We had them backed up on their own 7. It was a 3rd and 9 from their own 7 in the first half, and it looked like it was going to be a safety. Cameron Wake just completely bull rushed Roger Saffold into Goff's lap, and he shuffled his feet, moved to his non-arm side, and completed a nice first down to Lance Kendricks. That's probably the best play that he made given the situation. But I mean, other than that, I didn't really see much, but at the same time, he didn't, you know, crap all over himself either. Dolphins have a good offensive line. We were in his good defensive line. We were in his face all day and he didn't turn the ball over. The one turnover we had was a fumble recovery from their tight end. So, I mean, the jury's obviously still out on him, but I really can't give you a scouting report either way on him.
All right. Well, great stuff from you, Andy, as always. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Yep, fins up, baby.
We now move to the New England Patriots' 30-17 win over the San Francisco 49ers, and I'm here with our 49ers superfan, Charlie. And Charlie, you know, the 49ers fall to 1-9, and, you know, I think there's a game that not many people really had the had San Francisco favored in. But did you see some signs of hope here on your side?
Yeah, and, you know, after last week's game, I got asked a lot about how well Kaepernick was doing in the last 3 weeks. And really, I would attribute the success that the Niners had holding the Pats only 13 points in the first half to the defense. Surprisingly enough, the defense has been able to stop the run. And actually, you know, Gerald Hodges, the middle linebacker who was in for Bowman, has finally started to step up now that Jim O'Neill, the defensive coordinator, has put him in. Previously, it was Michael Wilhoit who was horrible in his run fits. But overall, yeah, the run defense is playing well. Pass defense in that first half was playing well as well. But really, after second half, the third quarter, the Patriots were just able to drive the ball down the field because Tom Brady is a magician in the pocket. Just the subtle pocket movements he was making to get out of the way of defenders. And, you know, he had a couple of times where he had the ball for 5 seconds and was able to convert on a third down, even a few. I want to say they had 3 third downs and 1 fourth down on that third quarter drive, and they were able to score, make it 20-10, and that's pretty much all she wrote after that.
And, you know, New England has been shifting people around a lot in their front seven, and yet they still were able to get 5 sacks on Colin Kaepernick. Is that more on the offensive line not being able to block, or is it Colin holding onto the ball too long or walking into the pressure? How is that shaking up?
I would say about 3 of those sacks were the actually 4 of those happened in the first half. 3 of those sacks, I would say, was on Kaepernick for not getting the ball out on time. But the other one, I mean, or the other two, I should say, the Patriots just, they have such good blitzing. They're able to get people one-on-one and then be able to overwhelm one side by just overloading a blitz on the left or the right. And Kaepernick didn't do very well in getting the ball out. But also Joe Staley's really, you know, the 49ers, the all-pro left tackle, is really having a tough season the last 3 weeks. So he got beat several times.
Well, the other thing, and, you know, granted, Kaepernick only completed 16 passes out of his 30 attempts, but he was really distributing the ball around evenly. Is that, you know, is that something you're encouraged by in terms of him getting through his reads, or do you think that's just because no one's really emerged as the go-to target yet in this offense?
Well, I would say, I mean, I was really impressed with Kaepernick in the first half. Last week, same thing. Week before that, same thing. Kaepernick has been playing very well in the first half. You know, just as he said, Kaepernick was 16 for 30. Well, in the second half, in the third quarter going into the fourth quarter, had 9 straight incompletions. So that, as you can imagine, really influenced that statistic. Because other than that, at one point, I know he was 10 for 13 for a touchdown. And, yeah, he looked really good. I think, you know, and again, going back to how many people have been telling me, oh, Kaepernick looks good, maybe we should keep him around. The offense has gotten dumbed down. He is not reading the field. He is getting the ball with a predefined read based off of the defensive alignment, especially when he does a check with me, just like it's college football. But he has a predefined read, and he's throwing it. If the defense starts to make adjustments and figures that out and figures out what read he's looking for, over, you know, and then Kaepernick is sitting back there doing the mannequin challenge in the pocket, and meanwhile he's getting pressured and not able to get rid of the ball.
All right, well, I do hope, well, I don't know actually if you hope that you're going to be adding to your win totals the season, but hopefully there continues to be some entertaining performances there, and you know, hopefully it's not too rough for you for the rest of this ride here.
All I can ask for is a couple of silver linings to play tough teams tight for the majority of the game. And going into the fourth quarter, it was 10-13, Patriots. So I'll take that moral victory, but it wasn't Kaepernick. It was this defense.
Good to know. Well, thanks a lot, man.
Yep, no problem. Take care, Nick.
You too. We now move to the Seattle Seahawks' 26-15 win over the visiting Philadelphia Eagles. I'm here with both of our super fans, but I'm going to toss it to the victor first, Justin. A good win at home. It looks like the Seahawks really smothered the Eagles. How are you feeling after this one?
This game was exactly what I expected. I thought that my score prediction was actually pretty close to spot on here. I thought the Seahawks would get close to 30. And, you know, you add that, you know, missed field goal, missed PAT in there right there. So pretty much went exactly to script as far as I was concerned.
And just tossing it quickly over to our Eagles superfan, James, who is not quite as happy with this this game. You guys did not get a whole lot moving on offense. until late in the game. And so, I mean, I don't know, what went wrong? What was the first thing that went wrong, I guess?
Let's see. The first thing that went wrong was the illegal formation on Nelson Aguilar, who was not on the line of scrimmage on what would have been Brent Celek's, 70-some-odd yard touchdown catch, pulling the center, Jason Kelce, out, basically untouched down the sideline. The moment Sproles went in motion before he got knocked out of the game with injury. Doug Peterson knew it was a penalty. He knew it was coming back. He basically just turned his back and didn't even watch the entire play. It hurt. I'm sorry, not Celek, Ertz. But it hurt just watching that and knowing that someone didn't line up properly. And that pretty much would have made the game, if we made the extra point, 14-13 at that point. And from there on out, we lose 5 yards. That was a third down play. And it was all downhill from there, from injuries, missed opportunities, turnovers, blown assignments, poor tackling, no tackling, losing receivers in the secondary, drop passes again. Thank you, Nelson Aguilar. It was like Murphy's Law out there. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong. So, I mean, hey, we were in Seattle. If the game was over at the end of the first quarter, I would have been happy because we at least kept it close. And after the first quarter, it was like everybody had a brain fart.
Well, the side of the ball that was not having brain farts was certainly the Seattle defense, and it's difficult to tell. Like, I don't know. I'm interested to know what you think, Justin, in terms of who stood out the best here, because, you know, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, Cam Chancellor, of course, Sherman had himself a decent game there too. But like, who are you giving the defensive game ball to in this one? There's a lot of guys to choose from.
There's definitely a lot of credit to give around, and so I'll mention a few of them. Cam Chancellor had a great game. You know, he hasn't missed a beat coming back from injury, which has been absolutely tremendous. I'm not sure if you guys saw, you know, how much of the game you saw. I know Eagles, James saw all of it, but, you know, Cam Chancellor goes down in the first quarter. Looks to me like he clearly got nailed in the head, helmet to helmet, but he goes down and holds his knee so they don't put him in the concussion protocol.
Right. I saw that. I saw that he clearly got hit in the head trying to make a tackle on
and like nothing very first close to his leg.
Trey Burton, yeah.
Yeah, and
definitely helmet to helmet.
On the one hand, that's not smart for his long-term health, so Cam, please take better care of yourself. On the other hand, that's really smart if you don't want to miss any time in the game, because they checked him out, and he's like, oh, no, knee's fine, and he goes right back in, and he starts making plays again.
He had an interception later in the game as well.
Mm-hmm. Sure did. But Bobby Wagner, the people need to understand, he might be the best linebacker in the game right now, especially with Luke Kuechly injured. He, you know, so many tackles. He's now that they blitz more, he is so good at getting to the quarterback. He does everything. He does everything well. I mean, he can run, hit, cover, you name it. He's what's at the center of that defense. And man, he makes plays left and right. And you know, when you have players like that, that makes the other team feel like, man, nothing seems to be going right. Everybody's getting blown up every couple of seconds.
And James, you know, the Eagles were one of those hot teams to start off the season. They're now fully back down to 500 at 5-5. Where do you think this team is headed? Do you think that, given that all the young pieces, you know, first-time head coach, all these kind of things, that these are just sort of, this is a little bit of growing pains, or I don't know, like, is the arrow pointing up or down right now for this team?
I'd say the arrow is pointing up, just not this season. 8-8, 7-9 is pretty much the harsh reality for this season. But again, like you said, first-year head coach, rookie quarterback, no one really expects us to do anything. I don't think anybody else in my division expected us to even be 5-5 at this point. You know, yeah, we're at the bottom of the division, but we're at 500 still. So at least that's something positive to take away from this. We're most likely not going anywhere. We do have an outside shot of making the playoffs. I'm not holding my breath on that any longer. The schedule down the stretch is favorable. We have only 2 road games. The remaining games are at home at this point. So could something, you know, flip in our favor? Possibly. But like I said, I'm not holding my breath on that. At this point, it is growing pains. There's a lot of pieces that we are still missing. We don't have a solid, bona fide number one wide receiver to where we can just lock on downfield and say that's the guy who's going to pick up and make the big play for us, or get that those critical yardage, or you know, draw coverages or shift the defensive secondary's tendencies. We just don't have that player right now. There's too much inconsistency in the wide receiving core. Even though it was garbage time, there was more Green Beckham catches towards the end of the game for him to you know, assert himself. He's been actually calling for the ball more in the media this week, not in a derisive manner to try to, you know, break up the team or the chemistry or anything. He just pretty much is trying to get Carson Wentz to realize, like, hey, as you go through your progressions, I'm often open. And, you know, for a guy of Green Beckham's stature, you know, again, he's 6'5", he's like 220. He's a mismatch pretty much on almost every corner in the league save Richard Sherman. But with the average height of a cornerback being 5'10", 5'11", and him being 6'5", you just throw it up there and give him a chance to get the ball no matter what route he's running. He's going to come down with it. Constantly trying to force things to Nelson Agholor, who's dropping everything. I mean, this guy right now can't catch a cold in the phone booth. It's disheartening. So, I mean, between that and the secondary, who basically lost track of everybody, you know, today, those are two areas of the team that, you know, could really use some improvement. And going into the offseason, I expect them to, you know, find some key pieces, if not in free agency, then definitely the draft.
Well, and it seems like you have quite a few interesting pieces, but it's difficult to tell if any of them are building blocks. I mean, do you think that when Smallwood had another good game, obviously you have Jordan Matthews has been the only kind of consistent guy there in the receiving core. Are these guys building blocks? Are these guys that, you know, are just sort of, yeah, the ball has to go to somebody?
I think the ball has to go to somebody. I think Smallwood will be a building block going forward. He just needs the repetition and consistency in the offense. They do try to work everybody in as far as the running game, you know, with Smallwood, Barner, Matthews, and Sproles. But also understand a lot of what they try to do, depending on down and distance and situation, more times than not, it's going to be Sproles and Matthews in the backfield because they're better blockers than Smallwood and Barner. They haven't picked that part of their game up yet. As time goes on, those guys will get those reps to where they can step up and do the type of things. But Sproles is just so much of a mismatch, period. When he's on the field, you're never really sure what to expect. Could be screened. They could send him out in the route. They could split him out wide. They could run him inside. They could run him outside. He's like Mr. Everything. He's utility knife, basically. And no other running back on our roster pretty much does that as well as Sproles does. Yeah, you can split Matthews out wide because he's, what, 6'1", 6'2", but he's not as sure-handed a receiver as Sproles. And, you know, Smallwood, like I said, he's a rookie, so he doesn't have the experience yet. Barner is, I believe, his second year with the team, so he's gaining some experience, but he doesn't finish runs like Matthews does or Sproles does. So, I mean, no one's really like the complete back. These running backs are probably going to stay for now. I don't see any of them going anywhere, but I do see wholesale changes in the secondary and the receiving core coming in the offseason. Those are definitely pieces where guys either are not stepping up consistently or there's definitely better talent to be acquired.
And real quick before we wrap this one up, Justin, you know, it seems like now that the Seahawks are just basically on a glide path to the playoffs and possibly to the NFC Championship game against the Cowboys, what it's looking like right now. But particularly with your schedule going forward, do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, the schedule gets much, much easier, which certainly helps. And, you know, this is a team that peaks. No team over the last 4 years has a better record, like November or later in the NFL, than the Seahawks do. It's no accident. You know, we play tons of rookies early in the year, and it takes them a while to gel. People come back healthy. I mean, Thomas Rawls was back. He looks really good. CJ Procise continues to look tremendous. And, you know, this offense has come alive, you know, especially now that those injuries have started to disappear. Russell Wilson is chucking the ball down the field. And, man, every time, you know, he skies that ball, I just assume it's going to be a completion. Unfortunately for James, I think he was feeling the same way late in the game, that every time that ball was flung, that it was going to be a big reception, because it usually was. Including, let's make sure we show some appreciation for them flipping the script and Doug Baldwin throwing the touchdown pass to Russell Wilson for a change.
Don't bring that up.
had to bring that one up as well. So, you know, here's a defense that's been great all year. This offense is exploding right now. These Seahawks are going to be a very, very tough out for anybody in the National Football League.
All right, good stuff. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
This is Justin, the Seahawks superfan, here with Neil, the Washington superfan, and Green Bay Brian, the Packers superfan. So let's start with you, Neil, the victor. Big win, but kind of a flurry at the end made the game seem, I think, a little bit more lopsided than it was. What can you tell me about this game today?
Well, I think the game today was summed up by two things. First of all, the injuries on Green Bay's secondary and also the linebackers as they went through the game. Maybe three things. The wind was a huge factor, I believe, in the game. And thirdly, Kirk Cousins did this time around what he couldn't do in the playoff game last January, and that is play just a terrific game, terrific all round. Great performance from Kirk Cousins. He was our man of the match.
Yeah, he had a terrific game. He was 21 of 30 for 375 yards and 3 touchdowns. But on your end, you had Aaron Rodgers. He threw for 3 touchdowns as well. So from your perspective, Brian, what's the story of this game?
Well, Neil touched on it a minute ago, and the injuries have really been a mitigating factor for the Packers this year. We have really struggled to string together any sort of competent defense for the last 4 weeks now. Even the run defense, which was something that we were able to hang our hat on early in the season, seems to have gone by the wayside. It's open season on Green Bay's defense, and I feel like we're going to be in a tough position to win most weeks if we're relying on Rodgers to score every time he has the ball.
Yeah, I said this to you before. I kind of want to say it to you here on the air so people can just sort of hear your reaction. I think it's official. The Green Bay Packers are bad. What do you say to that, Brian?
We certainly looked the part this year. The injuries haven't helped, but it's been, you know, before this season where we've been kind of looking like this. It's certainly shown itself to a greater extent this year. I think the sad part, I agree with you, I think the Packers are not long for this season. Maybe we can string together enough wins to be the winner of a really bad NFC North this year. But we're not long for the playoffs regardless. I don't know that anybody from this division is.
On the flip side, Neil, I can't help but say that it looks like Washington is a pretty good team again this year. Kirk Cousins is having a really nice year, especially these last several games. What's going so right there?
Well, first of all, Justin, I would say to Brian that being bad has never stopped anybody getting to the playoffs in the past. So I think there's plenty of hope for Green Bay to still get to the playoffs because that's a stinker of a division. But in terms of Washington's what's going right for us at the moment, it's Cousins. It really is down to the development of Kirk Cousins. He's been terrific all season, apart from that first game against Pittsburgh. And there's a key thing tonight, Justin, and that is Washington won a game on national television, and that doesn't happen very often. I think we're something like 3-15 in our last 18 national televised games. I'm delighted because it's 5 o'clock in the morning and I've stayed up and Washington have won. So thank you, world. It's made my night or my morning good. You know how many times I've gone to bed so angry and upset because we lost at five in the morning.
Yeah, my goodness, that I cannot imagine. It's not all Kirk Cousins. Look at Robert Kelly, 137 yards, 3 touchdowns. Brian touched on the woes of the Green Bay run defense today, but where did Robert Kelly come from? Talk to me about his performance today.
Yeah, I mean, his performance was good, but he had, at least 60 yards, maybe a little bit more than 60 yards on one run towards the end of the game. Otherwise, I actually thought Green Bay held him up fairly well. He was he was going around 3.5 yards a carry for most of the game. So he had that one huge run. Did have 3 touchdowns on the ground, I think. So that was impressive. I mean, the offensive line, yeah, sure, it's not all Cousins. The offensive line's been terrific, and there has to be a shout-out for Ty and Seki today, who I thought played really well, even though Clay Matthews certainly isn't 100% fit. He still had a very good game. He had a good game last week. And, yeah, the offensive line's terrific. Brandon Scherff, our right guard, he has to be a Pro Bowler this year. But, yeah, offensive line, bit of a running game. And, of course, Kirk Cousins passing the ball to Jamison Crowder and all the guys.
So, on your end of the ball, Brian, a positive I'd like to highlight, though, was Jared Cook. I think back to when Green Bay had JerMichael Finley back in the day, you know, a really dynamic tight end who could really catch the ball well, and there hasn't been anybody since then. Jared Cook, early in his career, looked like he was on the verge of becoming a really good player. Talk to me a little bit about his performance today.
I look at it as the quintessential Jared Cook performance, honestly. And I can only say this as a casual observer from afar for most of his career, but you saw the good and the bad with Jared today. You know, he made a series of really great catches, and scored a touchdown today, his first as a Packer. He also dropped an easy touchdown on one of the first couple of drives. Just looked like he was not on the same page as Rodgers. It could be a function of just having so little time together so far this year, or it could just be Jared Cook being Jared Cook.
Speaking of mental errors, what in the world happened on that, was it a little screen to, I think, James Starks? That was just a random sudden 35-yard touchdown, Neil. Did you guys just forget that side of the field exists? What happened?
Well, what happened was I think they overloaded that side, and Kendall Fuller, a rookie cornerback, he was desperately trying to get a timeout called. Didn't manage to get the timeout called. He had to cover the guy coming inside, and that left Starks all alone there for that touchdown. But, yeah, just a blown assignment, poor defensive play from Washington there. I was very disappointed. Dante Whitner was playing tonight, and he had a couple of Cook had a good game, but part of that was because he was lined up against Dante Whitner, which didn't really end up very well for Washington. But I don't like him at all. He can go tomorrow if he likes. I would point out though, Justin, that a lot was made about Josh Norman signing for Washington. But he created the turnover there in the fourth quarter, which I think probably sealed the game from being a game that you thought, wow, Green Bay could go down, get a touchdown, maybe then get the field goal to tie it. But Norman came in there, stripped the ball out for Compton to recover the fumble, and that was really the end of the game.
And Brian, I hate to keep bringing up bad news for you, but there's a lot of it in this game. Aaron Rodgers moved the ball pretty well. He also led your team in rushing with just 33 yards. Help me understand what the plan is in the backfield right now.
The plan is just to make it to the end of the season. We lost Lacy early. Starks has not been very good this year. He actually played okay last week. I think we gave him a handful of carries, and on a handful of carries this week too, he was good, but just, I think we might be a little early to abandon the run some games, but I can understand why too, because it's really not to our strength. The offensive line is really banged up. They've mentioned on the telecast that we're down a couple of guards and actually our starting center from this year. So just really the interior of that line hasn't lent itself as much to the running game as it has to the passing game. And then when you couple that with the bad defense we've been playing, we've really had to throw the ball on first, second, and third downs for good stretches of the second half the last couple of weeks. So until we can learn how to play defense here, I think we're probably going to expect to see Rodgers rear back and throw it 50 times a game or more. And I think that still probably gives us our best chance to win, but that's still a pretty narrow pathway.
I thought the guard that came in for you, Brian Spriggs, I thought he played better. He certainly quietened Chris Baker down in that second half.
Yeah, the backup guard that we had in before Spriggs came in has been our sixth man for I think 3 or 4 years now, and you know, he's just not very, he's not as good as Spriggs, and Spriggs is a tackle, whereas Barclay can play kind of across the offensive line, any position except for center. But he's sort of mediocre at all those spots, and I think he won't be on the team probably in the next year or two.
You know, I think at the start of the year, if you told somebody that, you know, this would be the final score of this game, everybody would be sure would be, you know, the other way around with who's on top. Just goes to show you how little we know in the preseason. Brian, what's next for the Packers? Who do you guys have next week?
We travel to Philadelphia, which I think is going to be another tough game. That's a good defense.
And what about you, Neil? Where to next for Washington?
We're very upset, Justin, because not only are we playing the Sunday night game, but we're now playing the Thursday game as well. Thanksgiving, we're playing at Dallas. So a very short week for Washington. I don't think that's right. We should be doing that. But yeah, we're going to Dallas. We'll be angry. And let's hope Kirk Cousins keeps rolling.
Well, there you have it. A big win for Washington over the Green Bay Packers. Brian is going to lick his wounds while Neil gets ready for the upcoming game on Thanksgiving, or as they call it where he comes from, Thursday. All right, fellas, thank you very much. I will talk to you guys later.
Thanks.
Take care, Justin.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for the Next Fan Up podcast. Thank you to Nick for helping with all the hosting. Thank you to all the super fans for contributing as we recapped all the games. Thank you to Pod Vader for putting this together. And, of course, thank you to BetDSI for sponsoring us. So everybody go out, have a great holiday week. Again, pay attention to our slightly amended podcast schedule this week, which I won't get into because I don't remember off the top of my head. Also, make sure you follow us on Twitter. That's at NFU Podcast. Send us an email, especially if you're a Buccaneers fan, because that team got a big win today. They could use some representation. That's nextfanup@gmail.com. Also, please check out our website. That's going to be nextfanup.wordpress.com. And especially check out James, our Texas fan, put together a great article where he explained exactly what win probability is. Spoilers, it's not what you think it is. He is a number cruncher professionally, so he knows what he's talking about. That might be the best piece of content that we've generated so far. That is a must-read, guys, so check that out. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jeff Fisher, whose win probability is always pretty low. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.